Welcome to Voices of the Community, which explores critical issues facing Northern California communities. We introduce you to the voices of community thought leaders and change makers who are working on solutions that face our fellow individual community members, neighborhoods, cities, and our region. This is George Koster, your host. This episode is part of our series exploring COVID-19's impact on nonprofits and small businesses in San Francisco. We started the series back in April of 2020 during the height of the first phase of the COVID-19 pandemic and the shelter-in-place requirements. Over these past 9 months, the COVID-19 pandemic and economic meltdown has wiped out millions of jobs in both the nonprofit and small business sectors, as well as shuttered tens of thousands of small business operations. The goal of the series is to shine a spotlight on the nonprofits, small businesses, and their staff who are struggling to deal with the impact of the COVID-19 pandemic on their operations, services, and sustainability. The series of interviews we conducted features voices from a cross-section of organizations that make up the fabric of our community. Each of them brings a unique perspective on how they and we are dealing with the issues facing our community during the global pandemic and economic depression.
But at the outset of this and ongoing, it's been people who are used to bringing people together who have been forced to keep people apart. Hospitality workers, entertainers, we're the ones who have really had to come together and keep people safe by keeping them apart.
In this episode, our featured voice is John Calden, the managing director of the San Francisco War Memorial and Performing Arts Center. The San Francisco War Memorial and Performing Arts Center opened in 1932 with a production of Tosca by the San Francisco Opera. The War Memorial name commemorates the people who served in the First World War. It is one of the largest performing arts centers in the United States, covering 7.5 acres in San Francisco's Civic Center Historic District and totals 7,500 seats among its multiple performance venues.
I'm joined remotely via Zoom by John Calden, Managing Director of the San Francisco War Memorial Performing Arts Center. Thanks for being here, John. I would like to begin by having you share with us a little bit about the War Memorial and the Performing Arts Center. I think for most San Francisco people, they walk by it there on McAllister and Van Ness. It's across from City Hall, and they're like, oh, it's a nice old building. So it would be great if you can kind of share War Memorial and how the War Memorial and Performing Arts Center work with arts and cultural organizations in San Francisco.
Oh, absolutely. Thanks for having us on, George. I'm excited to be here today. The San Francisco War Memorial and Performing Arts Center is in the heart of San Francisco, right across Van Ness Avenue from San Francisco City Hall. We have a number of performance venues here, including Davies Symphony Hall, the War Memorial Opera House, and then inside the Veterans Building, we have the Herbst Theater, the Woolsey Center for Opera, which hosts both the Toby Atrium Theater and the Bryan Education Studio. And we also have a really fabulous event space called the Green Room. All in all, we can host over 7,000 patrons in a given evening. And pre-COVID, would often do that with just the ballet performing alongside the symphony, San Francisco performances, being in the Herbst Theater, all of that could happen in one night. So we're both a home for culture and art in San Francisco, as well as a huge economic driver for the region. We've been here since 1932. Our resident company is the San Francisco Ballet, the San Francisco Opera, the San Francisco Symphony, and then San Francisco Performances, of course, is one of our primary users of the Herbst Theater, and we've had a long partnership with them as well. So I think that we're one of the cornerstones of cultural activity in San Francisco and really proud to be a department of the City and County of San Francisco.
And then, fun fact, historical, the charter for the UN was actually signed there at Herbst Theater.
That's correct. All of the plenary sessions took place in the Opera House. The UN charter was signed on the stage of what was then the Veterans Auditorium, which is now known as the Herbst Theater. And the Japanese Peace Accord was also negotiated in the Opera House. So we're a really big site for history. A lot of folks don't understand why UN Plaza is called UN Plaza, but it's called UN Plaza because indeed the charter was signed here. And for a brief period, they actually almost put the headquarters of the United Nations here in San Francisco before they decided to place them in New York. But yeah, we host a lot of history here and still continue to provide meeting space to veterans groups and a number of other nonprofits working on behalf of veterans causes here in San Francisco.
So, John, how has COVID-19 impacted the operations of the War Memorial with regards to just hosting all of those organizations? And your staff have, as I understand, have also ended up becoming essential workers outside the building itself.
Yeah, that's true. Well, fun fact, the first venue in the United States to have a public gathering canceled was the Opera House. And that was on Saturday, March 7th, 2020. We had a 2 p.m. matinee of the San Francisco Ballet's A Midsummer Night's Dream scheduled for that day. And we found out the evening before, on Friday the 6th, that we'd have to cancel that as well as all other performances we had scheduled in the building. Initially thinking that would be for just a few week period. And I think we all thought this would be a lot shorter than it was. And so obviously that's drawn out, but we were the first venue to be dealing with cancellations in the United States. And it was shocking, I would say. You know, as I mentioned, the Performing Arts Center opened in 1932. The first performance was a production of Tosca by the San Francisco Opera on the stage of the Opera House. And we've been in continuous operation ever since. So people really couldn't believe it when the word came down that we were closing the venues to prevent the spread of COVID. But clearly, Mayor Breed was way ahead of the curve, and her decisive action and bold action when people really weren't ready for it has saved countless lives. And there's nowhere else in the world I'd rather be than San Francisco. I feel safe and really proud of the mayor's work and everything she's done. So when we found out that we needed to cancel, we immediately notified all of our presenters and producers and anybody hosting events in the building. And again, it was just shocking to everybody. In the run-up to it, some of my staff had asked, oh, John, do you think we might get closed? And I had told them, well, if we do, we'll see it coming because we won't be the first, right? You never think you're going to be the first. But as it turns out, we did not see it coming. So how's it impacted us? Well, obviously, the immediate effect was to put a lot of people out of work. It's really unfortunate and really difficult, but, you know, arts and culture workers and event workers and so many folks who work in hospitality are out of work. And it's just hundreds and hundreds of people out of work just based on the closure of these three blocks of arts and culture venues. It's obvious, you know, looking at the performers, but a lot of folks don't think about the backstage crew, the front of house staff, the administrative staff and fundraising staff who work for these organizations, event managers, security guards. And then there's the ripple effect through the community of restaurants and bars and hotel workers. I mean, arts and culture really drives San Francisco. A lot of folks think of San Francisco as being a tech city, which we are. But the number one industry in San Francisco is tourism, and there would be no tourism to San Francisco if it weren't for arts and culture. So we really are the economic driver of the region, and I think that is becoming just so plainly known to everybody who didn't really think about it before. You know, one way to think about it is everybody's at home listening to music and binging Netflix and watching the great online performances that presenters are putting up and all the new and inventive ways of doing stage readings on Zoom, preventing previously recorded work, creating some new work for viewing online. The ballet has been doing some really incredible work. San Francisco Symphony just launched its current series, which is available online. And I think everybody sitting at home and watching all of this art at home is being reminded of how much art really does drive the world and really also drive the economy. So there's been a huge impact, I think, just with that. The other thing is, as I mentioned, we're a department of the City and County of San Francisco, and under the leadership of Mayor Breed and the Board of Supervisors, we've really flown into action to respond to COVID and to meet the needs of the community. And there's a lot of things people probably have read online or in the papers, but there's just so much work and so many people hours that are going in to supporting response efforts to COVID. The city is setting up hotels for the unhoused so that those folks have a place to quarantine themselves. And that's a huge effort. Some of our staff have actually worked as site monitors for some of those hotels for the unhoused who had to quarantine themselves. We currently have, I think, about 24 employees who have been deployed since March as disaster service workers for almost 6,000 hours combined of work at sites ranging from food banks to logistics support at the Emergency Operations Center, to providing additional staff support at San Francisco General Hospital, and as I mentioned, site monitors at the hotels for the unhoused. So it's really been an incredible feat to take all of these city employees and who are used to doing one kind of work and then have them doing another kind of work to support COVID. Also here, we early on partnered with the American Red Cross to host blood drives. So we've been hosting a number of blood drives. To date, we've hosted over 14 drives, collected almost 700 units of blood, and that will go to benefit about 1,900 patients because the blood system is really under attack right now. So many folks have been concerned about going out, obviously. And so if you see a blood drive in your area and you can attend it, please do. The nation's really in need of blood products for patients. We're also right now at the War Memorial. We're hosting both the homeless outreach team. So we're providing logistic support to them in the form of parking so they can get out there and work with the homeless populations in the Civic Center area. And we're working with Emergency Medical Services Agency, which is the city's EMT provider, essentially. And they built a special unit to transfer COVID-positive patients throughout the city. So let's say you live in a facility, maybe it's a retirement home, and you test positive for COVID and you need to be taken to the hospital. Well, it's really important that that's done safely. So we're actually hosting them here. We have 15 paratransit vehicles and 5 ambulances that are parking in the Horseshoe driveway that's encircles the Memorial Court between the Veterans Building and the Opera House. And we also have their dispatch center here on the second floor. So that whole operation is being run out of here. So as a city department in a centrally located facility, we're doing everything we can with our staff time and our facilities to support the city's response efforts. And we're very proud of that.
And John, with the COVID-19 proverbial meltdown on so many fronts, both pandemic and economic, et cetera, what would you like to see as some of the positive things that can come out of the pandemic and the situation that San Francisco and California finds itself in?
Sure. Well, the first thing that's really amazing, I think, is that so many of the performing arts companies are finding these ways to build new audiences and reach out to new audiences online. And right now, under the current health orders, we are allowed to use the performance venues for creating products without having an audience on site. So my one hope that I have is that the performance companies find ways to reach new audiences. I mean, obviously, theater, classical performing arts, concerts, all of those things are so often best experienced live. And that's what we do here is we bring people together. The arts both convene and create communities. We create communities, we bring them together. And so that's first and foremost what we'll always do. But if an outgrowth of this is that performing arts companies are able to take their products worldwide, you know, it be it a concert streaming or a dance performance or anything, and have a sort of hybridized audience where people are coming in to see it live. But if you want to enjoy San Francisco performances or the ballet, opera, or symphony, that you could do that from anywhere in the world. I think that would be a really great outgrowth of this. I also think it's really highlighting how important all workers are, really. I mean, it's been talked about a lot, but at the outset, we were the frontline workers, really, at the beginning. You have your hospital folks and your nurses and everything who are doing just absolutely incredible work. But at the outset of this and ongoing, it's been people who are used to bringing people together who have been forced to keep people apart. Hospitality workers, entertainers, we're the ones who have really had to come together and keep people safe by keeping them apart, which really does run counter to what it is that we're actually trained to do and what we designed to do and why we all chose this profession. So I think really realizing the value of people's work, no matter what it is something that I think people are becoming acutely aware of. And I hope that that continues. I've also found that people are being much more vulnerable with each other. Prior to COVID, people were really, I think, hesitant to talk about how they were doing emotionally in the workspace. I think people were hesitant to talk about how vulnerable they were feeling or their fears or what was going on at home if things were negative. And amongst my staff here and amongst some of our resident companies who I speak with constantly, people are really open about their own fears around COVID, about if they've lost a loved one or a friend, about just feeling stressed out or overtasked and asking for help. So I hope that we keep that vulnerability open and that people are able to talk about that honestly going forward. I think that would really be a great outgrowth of this. It also is amazing to me how many people, you know, San Francisco obviously has a really big homeless problem. And it's amazing to me how many folks have been housed in such a short period of time. So there are solutions to a lot of problems that when we're up against the wall, we can work together and find the will and the resources to do that. And I think that that's an important thing to know is that we are a community of people who can solve big problems when everybody's focused on them and working together. I hope that collaboration continues.
Thank you, John, for sharing all the wonderful work for Memorial. I didn't realize all of the incredible essential work War Memorial is doing today. That was great. And please stay safe out there.
Thanks, George.
That's it for this episode of Voices of the Community. You've been listening to the voice of John Calden, the Managing Director of the San Francisco War Memorial and Performing Arts Center. To find out more about the San Francisco War Memorial and Performing Arts Center, along with the performance venues and organizations that make up the complex, go to sfwarmemorial.org. We hope that you enjoyed the insights, points of view, and personal stories from the voices of changemakers and their nonprofits and small businesses featured in this series. To find out more and get engaged with the nonprofits, small businesses, and staff members featured in the series, please go to my website, georgecoster.com, and click on Voices of the Community to find links to the extended versions of these interviews and to listen to the entire series. After listening to these stories, we hope that you will consider making a donation and volunteering to provide a hand up to your fellow community members. I want to thank my associate producer, Eric Estrada, along with Mel, Lila, Michael, and Laura at the San Francisco Public Press and KSFP. To listen to our next episode in this series and to our archived past shows, which feature community voices working on solutions to critical issues facing Northern California communities, please go to georgecoster.com. While you're on our website, please sign up for our newsletter to find out more about future shows. Please subscribe to Voices of the Community on Apple Podcast, Spotify, and Google Podcast, or wherever you get your podcast. You can follow us on Twitter, @GeorgeCoster, and we'd love to hear from you with feedback and show ideas. So send us an email to george@georgecoster.com. I'm George Coster in San Francisco, and thank you for listening.